Welcome to the One Oahu podcast. I'm Brandy Higa, and today is Thursday, March 21st, 2024. We're back this week with Mayor Rick Blangiardi after what's been a whirlwind couple weeks. Mayor, how are you feeling right now?
I feel good. I'm excited. Tonight we start our town halls out in Kapolei, but yeah, it's been whirlwind, and I don't know. I'm really, I think I'm just caught up in the energy of all of it. You know, it seems like it's hard to believe. This is almost the end of the first quarter.
Right.
And this year is just off to a record fast start. But we've got a lot of good things going on. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, a lot of good things. A lot of exciting announcements were made. You're fresh off your State of the City address.
Yes.
One of those announcements, I want to start with the bonuses that you announced for the HPD recruits. For those that missed the speech or maybe didn't see it on the news, if you can explain that.
Yep. Well, first of all, it's the biggest initiative we've taken to try to help a department from the standpoint of instituting signing bonuses to the extent of $25,000. Look, joining the police department today is not an easy decision for any young man or woman or whatever point in life they might be.
Right.
Because keeping the public safe has become a dangerous situation, and we see it all the time, and we know it, and it's happened even here as well. So we realize it's a tough decision, and in and of itself, $25,000 is not enough to make a decision, but I wanted to make sure our police department had every possible tool they could have in their recruiting efforts, because that's what it's going to take is recruiting to try to entice some young people to join our police department. You know, operating with 400 police officers short is not anything that we take lightly. Certainly Chief Logan doesn't take that lightly. We know that in order to deter crime, the better the police presence, the stronger the police presence, especially in neighborhoods where we want to have that visibility, we need manpower. So just another step. I'm excited about it. I'm hoping it's going to be very successful. We thought a lot about the different numbers. $25,000 seemed to be that magic number that we all agreed on that was real, it was substantive. They've got to stay on the force for 3 years, but I think at the end of the day, it's a nice thing to be able to do to encourage people to join our police department.
Obviously, this was indicated by the chief that they were having trouble with recruitment, and that's the area that needed some help. But what about retaining officers that are already there and supporting the force? Because, you know, we see that every year. There's folks that retire. There's folks that just choose not to do
young this. People retiring. I've met some young police officers who've served 25 years retiring, you know, and yet because they had started early on. And look, we are talking about retention bonuses. I'm sure we're going to put something into play. I'm a big believer on retention bonuses because of the value. You know, it's one thing to recruit somebody coming in the door and you can only hope for the best, and there's a lot of unknowns. At the level that we're talking about, with people who are thinking about retiring after 25 or so, or even 20 plus years in the department, their knowledge, their skills, everything that they have is of extreme value and importance. So we would like to really kind of just not going to end people from retiring, but if we could delay that, especially now while we try to build up underneath in the ranks, and of course everybody evolves and matures over time, it would be better just to have that experience on our force and make sure that it's still there.
You also announced the new Department of Housing and Land Management. Can you talk about some of the ways that DLM and housing already work together now for folks that, you know, because
sure,
this is why it makes sense.
Right, yes. They've been working extensively. Look, for want of a better way to say it, the Department of Land Management is really real estate transactions. Mm-hmm. You know, and we have two outstanding lawyers in charge, and Kat Tashner, who is our director,
and Keith. Right.
You know, they're really talented. It's a transactional business acquisitions, and certainly Kat led a lot of that. Housing is more into rules, regulations, ordinances. You know, we brought over Denise Asiri Matsubara, who we recognized the other night, as well as Kevin Auger, her deputy. What we've learned early on is the minefield, if you will, in developing housing is really tricky when you start talking about the utilization of municipal city bonds, the difference between what the state can do, what HHFDC, what the city can do. You know, it's just a complicated thing. And so what we wanted to do was understand all of those complications, understand the rules we need to get changed. And I talked about that during the State of the City. And now if we in creating this one department will only lend itself to cohesion and the synergy that we really need in order to effectively get things done. So it makes all the sense in the world. Quite honestly, I've heard from a number of people since the speech very much in agreement with this. So while we had great collaboration, especially between Denise and Kat as the two respective leaders, having met with them a lot, this is just going to streamline our operations. Time is the enemy and time is money in this business. So these ridiculous delays in the past of trying to get stuff done are very costly on a number of levels. This should also be one more step we're taking to really pay respect to the public by facilitating as most efficiently as we can to the end game of what we're trying to get done.
How will that work structurally? Because you just mentioned Kat Tashner and Keith Suzuka, the work they're doing is great, but now you're moving in, will housing be a division or?
No, you will land management? No. Well, you know, we haven't quite worked out the roles of, really, it's about the role of Kat and Keith, both of whom are very much in favor of housing being the dominant role. We'll figure it out. It's, you know, having it in one department also facilitates the staffing that we know we need to do as well. We want to be able to have that kind of communication. I made mention of that in the speech, saying we know we need people with skill sets. This is, I don't have to tell you or anybody listening to this podcast, acquisition of anything is a complicated process. When you get involved in the kinds of things we're involved in, they're very complicated, very labor intensive, and you need people working on it, and they're also very time consuming. So this again is to create synergy, better communication internally. I think one of the things that we talked about coming into office, and in fact, we asked for, and we made several announcements that night. I don't want to get out in front of ourselves, but we asked to look at the reorganization of DPP, Housing and Department of Land Management, and Ocean Safety and EMS. And on two out of the three, it was strongly recommended that we do consolidate, in one case separate, and the other one leave it alone. Okay, so, you know, that's where we're at, because I've said all along, in trying to understand the problem, which we really have gone to work on across the board with all of this stuff. If the organizational structure is part of the problem, then do something about it. Whether it should, you know, or in some cases, leave it alone. Like in DPP's case, you know, it was leave it alone. It didn't grow too big and too diverse, but we needed to focus on process, people, and technologies. Or I should start off with people, process, and technologies. In the case of this, this is about synergy in very complicated transactions that require a lot of back and forth among a lot of lawyers, if you will, as well. But there are other things that come into play as far as housing and land management. But it takes the time just to even, you know, identify a property and then get into the negotiations of that acquisition and everything else that falls into that, you know, on whether or not we can develop it. What's the cost of development? You know, what's the condition? All that stuff in one department would be much more enhanced.
Let's talk about the department you mentioned that we are leaving alone, Department of Planning and Permitting. They've made tremendous strides since your State of the City address last year. Can you talk about those strides? And then, like you mentioned, people, processes, technology, the priorities that you are now looking to that you can report on perhaps next year, State of the City.
Well, you know, I really am proud of the work that they've done there. Don Takeuchi of Puna has really stepped in. And look, I think we wanted to, and we said this all along from the beginning, we wanted to do this organically. We wanted to get the buy-in of the people who work there. You know, for too long, because of all the delays and everything else that was going on, the people with DPP within there, despite their expertise, were really often maligned publicly. I've met men and women who've worked there and said, yeah, I tell people I work for the city and county, but I always dread it when they go, which department? We wanted to overcome all of that. And so, you know, we knew through the audit and everything else in our discussions that, you know, it had woefully lacked in investments, was understaffed, people were poorly played, not competitive. That's why good people would leave and didn't really want to go, but would go to higher paying, all of that stuff. So we've begun to work on that. And so we're not only in the business of hiring, we're in a net positive there. We're increasing the pay of our, I announced the other day, we're working with HGA on a supplemental agreement and increasing the pay. And across the board with our permit examiners, our building plans examiners, all of that. We're investing in technology. You alluded to the fact that we took what was historically 3,600 or so just applications in line to be pre-screened, which would take 5 to 6 months. And a year ago, after we started using artificial intelligence, I said that had been reduced to, you know, from 5 months to 5 weeks. Today it's 3 days with no backlog. We're making those same kind of inroads. We're just doing a lot of stuff that needs to be done. It's all solution-oriented. It's look at the problem and put pressure against the problem with the resources you know can address that. The biggest variable in all of this is the talent base that we need in hiring. So one of the things we're also doing, and this is a credit to HGEA as well, is we're outsourcing, like on our code plan reviews, mm-hmm. and being able to hire, in the interim, out-of-market expertise that can help facilitate that, because that part, probably since 2016 or so, has become the most complicated, causing all kinds of different delays. So we're doing everything we can, which is why I proudly made the announcement that a year from tonight, or a year from last Thursday, that, you know, what has been not only months, in some cases years, for permit to even be reviewed, will be done in 2 to 4 weeks on residential and commercial within the year following, in less than 6 months. Commercial applications sometimes have taken several years here. These are big, bold steps forward. They're big, bold statements of declarations on our part, but I have every confidence we're going to be able to deliver. And why? Because we made really smart investments in technology. We understand the problems. We have really good people now that are being supported in order to tackle this, and we're going to get it turned around.
And then that last department that you mentioned, the standalone ocean safety, or whatever it might be called later, but basically for the lifeguards, what's the timeline process? What happens to that now? Because there's a little bit of council involved.
Yeah, well, the council has a resolution, but we're going to be meeting with them. We're going to resolve it. Look, there's no egos involved here. We want to be supportive. It needs to be standalone. The only debate is whether or not it was going to go through a charter amendment to be voted on by the public, or whether I could invoke my mayoral powers to do that. The consensus on our side of the fence seems to be, let's do that, not put it up. We can always go out later for a charter amendment. But nobody's disagreeing, after all the analysis that was done by the task force, that they should be separate. And quite honestly, the scale of challenge for our ocean safety people, beyond just how crazy the water is. I mean, this is the most challenging water in the world. And that's why we said the best watermen and waterwomen in the world. But beyond that, it's 227 miles of coastline around Oahu. And it's amazing how people will find their way to the ocean. It's not just at the beaches, all over the place. And so getting things like our dawn to dusk hours all worked out, increasing the number of lifeguards that we have, and allowing them to really focus, and from a leadership standpoint, be focused on how they can best serve as we build. There are a lot of things we need to get done with ocean safety, not the least of which is getting us some decent headquarters out in the North Shore.
You mentioned it a couple of times, but more numbers. And it's not just, you know, DPP, HPD that need the bodies. A lot of departments really are dealing with this. I know this was brought up during the budget hearings last week, but unfilled positions that are budgeted for, you know, some people have asked to do away with those. But I know that there's a danger in that.
Yeah, they tell me there's a danger. Look, here's the reality is we have about 3,000 vacancies. We probably really, really need 2,000. Some of those jobs that have been on the books, they never want to take off because you never get them back. That's right. How people say it. And but some of them also, time has gone by. I mean, there are job descriptions in there where it talks about people using typewriters and stuff. I mean, you know, I want to be realistic about that. You know, I think at this point right now, our workforce is about 10,300, 10,500, some 8,300 are full-time employees. And the balance are in personal services contract, and then the other ones are vacant. Somewhere in there, to the number of around 2,000, if we could get there, and we're beginning to make positive strides. We said before, we first introduced this 2 years ago, we had a lot of foundational work to do systemically within our department because of just processes and procedures and the very fact that the Human Resources Department did not see themselves involved in the building of our workforce. They saw themselves ministerial to handling people's problems about benefits and stuff like that. This has been a major shift in all the things that we're doing with respect to recruiting, with respect to retention and development, things that I ask HR to be involved with and the kind of training efforts that have to be made. And then of course, and we talked the other night about succession planning and leadership roles and so on and so forth. We're doing everything we can to not only express, if you will, and demonstrate to our existing workforce that they value, but we also want to really improve things so we can recruit really well. I actually think, we opened up a little while ago talking about the challenges of HPD. That's because people put a gun on their hip, and they, when they go out in the morning, they don't know if they're going to come home at night. A lot of these jobs are nowhere near that risky, and the city's a good place to work. We just need to be able to recruit aggressively and hire effectively. You heard me talk about, you know, we came in and we announced it 2 years ago, 180 days to get hired. In today's workforce, especially post-COVID, with the number of people who are available, nobody's waiting around 6 months to be hired. They're going to move on pretty quick. Even 90 days, which I said we can cut to 60 days, is not necessarily ideal. But that said, it's a lot better than where we were. We're going to continue to improve on it. And for the second year in a row, we only have 3 months left in this fiscal year. It looks like we'll have another, for the first time in more than a decade, positive growth. Over last year's positive growth, and that was the first time. So this time here, that's good. We're trending in the right direction. I said when we first introduced this, it might take us till the last day we're in office to really make the kind of inroads. And maybe even then, we will not have quite got there, because you're dealing with so many variables with people retiring and everything else. But if we do all the foundational stuff right and we continue to build on our workforce, we will have changed the trajectory of how Department of Human Resources functions in the city when it comes to the recruitment of personnel, the retention development and succession planning, and the numbers of people we have. That's the end game. It takes a while to do that. It's a big organization.
You mentioned police officers. They wear that gun on their hip. They're not sure if they'll come home. There was a moment in your speech where you honored the two officers who were injured in the New Year's Day shooting. Yeah. You know, I'm sure you practice your script before the speech happens. You make sure to put it in there. But then when the moment happened, that's a little different. The family got emotional. Everybody got emotional. What did that mean to you in that
moment? Well, we recognized, you know, Officer Flores and Officer Fatissimano. And I asked them to stand. We recognized after we described briefly what they encountered with the reckless shooting and you know, it, just all of that. And one guy lost, you know, one of the officers lost his eye, and the other, you know, was shot in the abdomen. And when they stood, I was really moved by the fact that the audience not only applauded and stood up, it was not just the length of it. You could feel the emotion and the appreciation of those two guys. It was so palpable. It was very powerful in the auditorium that day, and that exceeded, and I was gratified that it did. You know, you hope and say, okay, I knew that I was gonna ask them to stand. I didn't know how people would respond. That was really heartfelt, and it just told me that everybody was in sync at understanding just how much they put at risk that day. And any officer, those two guys could have been any two guys in the police department. It just so happened they were there. And that's the thing about it. That's what I say. That's where the risk is. You just don't know if you're going to be at the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time. And so that was a good moment in the speech.
As our sirens go past now during this recording, Mayor, I want to get to one more thing that you mentioned in the speech before moving on. Roving park crews for each district. When does that start and how will that work?
The actual start date is going to be soon. I can't tell you the actual trigger date. I probably will know that, but it's going to be soon. And I want to credit Laura Thielen, our director of Parks and Recreation, and Kehel Pu'u, because this is about equity. This is about fairness and calling it like it is. You know, we'd gone out and seen the parks on the west side. I've walked through. You can see the lack of irrigation, the dryness, and so on and so forth, different than what you see in town. And that's not right. But again, Laura, Director Thielen, has done a great job of recruiting. We've had more manpower, but we're dedicating specific resources in the spirit of problem solving. So 18 crews, we've got trucks, we've got rubbish containers. We're gonna change their hours. They're gonna start later, work later. They're gonna work on the busiest times so that while people are in the parks, they're gonna feel good about that. We're gonna keep things clean. I think the folks in Waianae and Eva Beach, they more than deserve it. It's been a long time coming. I'm excited to have that impact happen out there. I really am. And so we're excited about it.
I know that after your speech, it wasn't even a full work day before you actually jumped on a plane to go to Maui to listen to Mayor Bisson's speech.
Yes.
And that's a community that's in healing still. Yeah. What was that like for you to go to listen to him?
Well, you know, it was really kind of different. I mean, it was very emotional, to say the least, in that, you know, we knew going in it was going to be his report for a state of the city after Lahaina. And he had to talk, in the, which they did in the beginning, about 100 plus people dying. I think there's 101 and two are still unaccounted for. I think those are the actual numbers. And they opened up with screen with beautiful music playing, and they had these big facial pictures of all these people going by slowly, what their ages were. You could just see them as if they were in the room with us. It was really emotionally, you know, powerful and draining at the same time, out of sadness. And then he had to get up and give a presentation. And what Mayor Bisson talked about really was so much of what they have done since then to try to not only help with healing, but all the physical stuff that had to happen. So it was more in that kind of a context. Almost everything was germane to Lahaina, as opposed to the overall island, other than the fact that he opened up talking about the bond ratings were very favorable, and that spoke to the well-being of the rest of the island. He said, I know a lot of people don't care about bond ratings, but it will really help us in getting lower interest rates and the kind of money we're going to have to borrow, et cetera. But it did speak, though, to the fact that as disastrous as Lahaina was as a loss, that there's a lot more going on in Maui. Just right now in this first year, so much focus, understandably, for all kinds of reasons. And so his whole conversation was on Lahaina. And in some ways, while I sat there being so proud of him, staying there, knowing full well that, boy, as a rookie mayor, being in office only 7 months to have that happen, you know, was such a game changer, right? And all, because I'd listened to Rick during his campaign and all the things that he wanted to work on and do, and I know all of that has had to go to the side because of the dominant theme of Lahaina. So I think next year will be a little bit different. This year, they're still very much in the thick of it. It's still early. They're still sorting through, still trying to find housing, still trying to figure out the amount of money it's going to, all this stuff. And that may go on for a while, but I think, you know, the one takeaway I got was there's a lot of pride and a lot of resilience. And people, well, nobody could feel good about what happened. It's about moving forward from this incredible tragedy. And this just, you know, it's, you get that feeling when somebody's gone through such a tragic event and you get through the grief of the hour, if you will, there is that, okay, because we're a resilient people, we go forward. You could feel that they're in the early stages of we're going to go forward from here. And it was very powerful.
You mentioned it at the top, but an ambitious town hall tour starts for you tonight. Thoughts, expectations, hopes going into this one?
You know, not that I couldn't come up with another slogan, but I thought last year I extemporaneously said it's going to be a journey of learning to our team. That's what this is, continued learning, journey of learning. I want to get out and pick up where we sort of left off. I love these because, you know, we expect the unexpected. We have an open mic. We tell the audience up front, mm-hmm. We're here. We bring all the expertise we can. So if there's a question in any specific department, hopefully there's somebody there. There's somebody there to make a connection to do follow-up, which we did a lot of last year. But it's really, you know, unfiltered. We tell them, you can come up here and you can ask us anything. But I'm going to tell you right now, you may not hear what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the ground rules. That's what you get, because we're going to tell you the truth. We're not going to pander, but we're here to also be educated. And I would tell you that I was pleased last week. I saw an editorial of the Star Advertiser that talked about the fact that we listen well. It's one of the things I didn't talk about with you this morning right now, but that whole effort we're making with the skip level meetings to talk to our people in a workforce at the level of the workforce that really does affect change. That's one form of listening. The town halls are another. Mm-hmm. Nobody, starting with me, is trying to operate in some kind of ivory tower bubble. You know, we want to be out there. So, and I think it's also educational for the rest of our cabinet. For example, if you're a cabinet member, let's say you live in Hawaii Kai, and your job is really demanding, which they all have, you know, your world is kind of fixated there in a way, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on the nature of the department. One of the things that this thing did for all of us as an education, getting through all those districts, is to become sensitive to how people are feeling and what they're thinking and what they're dealing with in those places on a firsthand basis. You know, you don't have to surmise it. You're there, up close and personal. I thought that was really educational. I think it helped sensitize all of us to a better comprehension of the island and its diversity, where issues were unique and where there were common denominators. And I think we all learned a lot from that, that will help all of us lead. So I think we'll do it again, and I think we're going to learn even more this year.
Well, Mayor, on that note, this is the One O'ahu podcast. So for one final thought.
Well, one final thought is coming to the end of March. Time goes by fast in this job. I want to thank everybody for their patience, but please know, if you feel impatient, you're not feeling any more impatient than we are. We want to get stuff done. We want to get it done. We want to do meaningful stuff. We want to get it done fast and effectively and with quality. And I just know that we're on it. So thank you for this opportunity.
Mayor, thank you for your time.
Okay.
Again, that first town hall meeting is set for 6:30 p.m. That's today at Kapolei High School. Come with your questions or come to listen. Either way, the meeting is completely open to the public. Then next week, March 28th, we'll be at Kailua Intermediate. The full town hall schedule can be found at honolulu.gov and on Mayor's social media platforms. We hope to see you there. Mahalo for listening to the One O'ahu podcast. And until next time, aloha.